I'm always looking for screen-free options to entertain my kids, especially my oldest when we have long car rides or things like that. And something that I really love using with him are podcasts. And there's a really cute new podcast called Mysteries About True Histories, which the acronym is MATH, M-A-T-H. And it's from the creators of the hit podcast Who Smarted and Netflix Brainchild. And it's all about the adventurous world of mysteries about true histories. And it follows these two characters, Max and Molly, who have just been recruited into a secret order of problem solvers. And they're on adventures through time, packed with puzzles, hidden equations, history, and it's really funny, which makes learning kind of cool. And it's perfect for ages 6 and up. So new episodes drop every Thursday, each stacked with so much laughter your kids won't even realize how much they're actually learning. And my oldest is about 6 and a half, and he loves stuff like this. So it's a great new podcast to introduce to your kids. The episodes are really short, like 15 to 20 minutes. So tune in to Mysteries About True Histories with your older kids. You can follow and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Welcome back to the podcast, No One Told Us. I am your host, Rachel, and here today with me is Dr. Jasmine of Pearls of Jasmine, who is a clinical pharmacist and a mom of one. She became very passionate about maternal mental health after she suffered severe postpartum depression and anxiety shortly after the birth of her child. And as a healthcare provider herself, she never thought she would be affected because she assumed she'd recognize some of the signs and how to ward it off. Writing about her journey on her blog and then sharing some of these moments on Instagram have been a way to try and heal and normalize the stigma of mental health for other moms. Just a few months ago, she completed her perinatal mental health certification to continue to educate herself further on perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. Thank you so much, Dr. Jasmine, for being here with us. I think this episode is going to resonate with a lot of our listeners. So I'm so glad that you are willing to be such an open book and to talk about this. Welcome.
Thank you, Rachel, so much. And you can just call me Jasmine. I put the doctor because people don't know pharmacists have like doctorate degrees, but like most pharmacists don't like being called, or not that they don't like, it's just weird to them.
Oh my gosh. Well, you're being very humble.
To be here.
The way that you write about your experience is so relatable to so many of us who have also struggled with mental health postpartum. So I really just appreciate you so much for, like I said, just putting yourself out there and being really open and honest about this, because I think it really helps so many people.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm happy to share. And honestly, I feel like the more stories we hear, the more people open up about it, it becomes less stigmatized and it becomes more normal to just, you know, not feel so alone when you're going through it.
Absolutely. So could you share just a little bit about kind of your personal experience with your perinatal mood disorders or your perinatal mental health and how you kind of knew that that's what you were dealing with, or did you not know until it was a little bit too late? How did that all go down?
Yeah. So I share pretty extensively like on my blog but I'll just do like a quick sort of recap. But shortly after I had my daughter and I also leading up to it, we had a hard time conceiving. So infertility played a little bit of a picture in the background, but so I was very, I would say I was a little bit anxious during the pregnancy to make sure, because we finally got pregnant, that I wanted to keep the pregnancy. Obviously, everybody is like that. So I had hired a doula and I had a really great pregnancy, a really great childbirth. But I think I was so focused on like the childbirth part being like the scariest part of this whole experience that I really neglected and kind of dropped the ball on postpartum. And being a new mom, I figured like, oh, you know, I have a really supportive husband. I have a great family. Like, you know, I felt like I had everything set up, quote unquote. And so I didn't really understand what it felt like to be in postpartum and have that village. And so shortly after I had my daughter, we suddenly realized there were a lot of issues that were coming up. I was having a lot of issues with breastfeeding. I had a lot of pressure to feel like, you know, I had to do it all. And then over time, because I was trying so hard to be the sole person breastfeeding her, and then we also had latching issues. So we were pumping, we were, you know, doing the syringe feedings, we were just trying like everything and floundering. I developed mastitis like 2 weeks into my postpartum.
And
on top of like all of that going on. We had so many visits to the doctor to like try to fix the whole breastfeeding issues. So I wasn't sleeping very much. And I think it's a lot of it's like chicken and the egg, what came first. I started noticing that like I was, you know, constantly Googling about the breastfeeding, constantly Googling about like, is this normal for my kid to be like waking up like, you know, after 20 minutes or like, you know, how do I make this work? And so there was kind of an anxiety component. And then I started developing insomnia. I couldn't sleep very well. Even when she was sleeping, people would say, oh, she's sleeping. You should rest. And I just could not fall asleep. Like my brain could not shut off. And it turned into this sort of crippling insomnia anxiety where every time I needed to go to sleep, I would worry like, oh my God, am I going to fall asleep before she wakes up the next cycle? So that was, you know, very new for me because I thought I could survive off little sleep being like going through pharmacy school and all that stuff. I was like, yeah, I've survived off like 4 hours of sleep a night on average. This will be nothing. But no, I didn't survive off like, it's not the same when it's like 1 hour, 30 minute chunks. Right.
Right.
So I didn't understand that. And I think the fact that like I couldn't sleep maybe started driving into depression where I was wondering like, what is my life now? Like, what did I do to myself? And I think the infertility portion played a little bit of a role in like, you know, we tried so hard for this, but what if I made a mistake? Like, why did I want this on the other side of everything? Like, this is what was going to happen or show up. It just felt, I think that drove like sort of a guilty feeling and a sort of
because you're probably thinking, oh, we should just be so grateful. We should just be so happy.
Yes. And that's what, you know, the worst thing to say, people is like, oh, at least you have a healthy baby, right? Or, you know, at least you can try again, you know, when people get miscarriages. Yeah. So it's this whole new world that like I really didn't understand till I was in it. And so as a, as a healthcare provider, I realized I was starting to get depressed. I could tell. The problem was, I think I was trying to course correct. So I said, you know what? I think breastfeeding is the biggest contributor at this point. If I just cut off the breastfeeding early, then I'll be able to sleep and then everything will go back to normal and we'll be fine. So I did. I stopped breastfeeding. I you know, didn't love having that option, but we were already having so much issues and difficulty doing it. I would sit at the pump even just to say like, oh, maybe I'll exclusive pump. But I would sit there for half an hour at a time and like nothing would come out. And that would actually drive up my anxiety even more because I felt full. It wasn't like a supply issue. Yes. And I'm like, then I'm thinking and spiraling like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have surgery. Are they going to have to like drain my boobs or like, you know? So that's when it started getting bad and I cut off the breastfeeding, but it didn't get better. And I think a thing we kind of forget about is the hormone drop when you stop breastfeeding. Yeah. And I cut it off very suddenly. I was very cold turkey about it because I said, I can't even like pump. I can't even get rid of it. So I just needed to stop like now. And it didn't get better after that. It actually got worse. To the point, you know, my OB at my 6 week visit was like, I think you need to be on antidepressants. Like she flat out said, you know how they want to send you home on like birth control pills.
Yeah.
She's like, I think you need like antidepressants.
Oh.
And I wasn't willing to accept that at that point. Even as a pharmacist, I thought, you know, I just need to like write it out. We just stopped breastfeeding, give it a few more, you know, weeks. And I know antidepressants take 4 to 6 weeks to work. And I just thought, I don't have that time. I needed to be better yesterday and I don't have time to wait for this medication to work. I don't know if the side effects are going to make my insomnia worse. I just need to sleep. I just need to sleep. So I think that's kind of the story of like how that progressed. So it was a lot of severe anxiety and depression all mixed into one and insomnia.
Yeah. And the insomnia piece is so hard too, because like you said, it's like a chicken and egg, and the more depressed and anxious you are, the harder it is to sleep, but you really do need sleep for your mental health to be well. So it's like this vicious cycle. So did you end up seeking any professional help or support in managing that? Or did you just like white knuckle it and get through it? Or how did that all go?
Yeah. So I thought I would just skip the medicine and see what would happen. And my doctor said, I really think at least you should see a therapist. Mm-hmm. And up until this point, I'd never seen a therapist in my life. I'm Asian American, and my background or family is very like, therapist, why pay to, complain to someone? Just talk to your family members. Just, right. Think positive.
Right.
You can think your way through this. Think happy. And so I was growing up, I already sort of had I don't need that. Or that's not going to be helpful. How is that going to help me through this? What I need is someone to help me get to sleep. I need someone to tell me what it means when my baby cries. I need to know why is my baby doing this weird sleep cycle thing? And I didn't think a therapist was going to be helpful. But with sort of my husband encouraging me, I think you should at least see somebody. And that's big for him because he also doesn't really like medical, seeing doctors and medications and stuff. Right. So I had attempted to see a few people. It didn't pan out too well. When it started getting really bad, I was having really bad intrusive thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I would tell my husband, and I think the tipping point was actually on his birthday. I was having this awful day. I couldn't sleep. I think I hadn't slept for over a day, and it was just really getting to me. So I spent the whole day kind of moping around, just trying to sleep. And the thing is, it wasn't I didn't have chances to sleep. Mm-hmm. He would say, hey, why don't you try to rest and I'll take care of the baby and stuff. But I think that made me feel even more guilty and mm-hmm. anxious that I was given all this time and I could not fall asleep. I asked doctors for sleeping medications and just felt like everyone seemed to have some sort of side effect where I was just so anxious that I couldn't accept it to let it work.
Yeah.
And so finally, on his birthday, he kind of begged me, will you please try the medication, an antidepressant or something? And I said, and that was actually the first time I ever saw him cry in my life. And I've known him since high school. So I've known him a really long time, and he doesn't break. And I think when I saw him break over this, I was okay, I have to try. I have to, get started. So that's when I started the medication, and it didn't work instantly. I knew it wasn't going to. So it was still very rough for a while. Until he said, we need to see someone, a specialist. And we finally found a psychiatrist that worked with me, and I finally felt heard. For me, the big thing, the big elephant in the room was kind of this sleep piece for myself. I couldn't sleep, and nobody was really addressing that or understanding how big of a problem that was, that I could not sleep. My daughter was getting better sleep than I was. And, so finally she said, Jasmine, I'm going to get you to sleep. She didn't say, you're depressed, you're anxious. She said, I'm going to get you to sleep. She's like, I know it's going to take a while and we're going to figure things out together. But it felt like somebody finally saw me and wanted mm-hmm. to hold my hand through this. And she was really the key to me getting better.
I love that. And I actually love that you talked to about the first few therapists maybe weren't a fit, and you eventually found this person that really seemed to get it and wanted to help you with what you felt like you really needed the most help with. I think sometimes people go to therapy and maybe they don't mesh well with the therapist, and so they say, oh, therapy's not for me, it's not going to help me. And sometimes you really do need to push through and work with a couple different people before you find somebody that you feel like really gets you, right?
Completely. Yeah. And also the psychiatrist is somebody who prescribes medication. She doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily offer therapy, mm-hmm. but even just a medical professional working in this field who was able to validate that, that was important.
Yeah. And to understand that that's your first line of defense, that was your biggest presenting problem at the time was your insomnia. And so, yeah, that's so huge. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about some of the other options for medication for people who are dealing with perinatal mental health issues. We'll be right back.
Now, if you know me, you know that I love to cook and I love creating healthy meals for my family. But even more than that, I love things that are easy and convenient. And even though I love to cook dinner for my kids, sometimes for things like lunches or if I'm just going to be working at night and need something easy for myself to grab, I love Factor's meals. And especially now in the spring and summertime where we've got more plans, we're busier, we're outside, we're going out and doing things more, having Factor meals in my fridge is such a game changer because they're healthy, they're zero prep, and they're so fresh and delicious. Factor's fresh and never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes right from your microwave. So no matter how busy you are, you always have time to enjoy nutritious and great tasting meals. And when I tell you they are actually delicious, I 100% recommend these. My mom even recently asked me, are they really good? I heard you talking about them on your podcast, but are you really saying that you like them? And I said, yes, you have to order them. They are actually so, so yummy. So what are you waiting for? There are 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons you can choose from each week. So you always have new flavors to explore. You'll never get bored with the same old meals. They truly taste like restaurant quality, so you don't feel like you're depriving yourself of anything. It actually feels like you're fueling up your body with delicious food that is real and super, super nutrient dense. So you can enjoy this effortless support to your lifestyle, choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage whatever goals you have, and simply just eat well-balanced, delicious, easy food. Head to factormeals.com/nooneToldUs50 and use code nooneToldUs50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. So this is an amazing deal. That's code nooneToldUs50 at factormeals.com/nooneToldUs50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% of your next month while your subscription is active. And feel free to send me a message and ask me for my favorite meals because I love talking about them and I'll be happy to help you choose. Today's podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, and medical-grade ingredients. Active Skin Repair can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburn, rashes, and other types of skin damage. And the best part is that it's safe and non-toxic, which makes it suitable for use on all skin types and all parts of the body, even with rosacea, eczema, or acne-prone skin. With over 500,000 happy customers and thousands of 5-star reviews and ingredients so safe and clean they can be used from the littlest member of your family to the oldest, you now have one simple solution for all your family's skin health needs. I have 3 kids. We have injuries in our house almost daily, and so it's so nice to have Active Skin Repair to reach for in my cabinet because I know that it's safe, natural, and non-toxic. We use it for things like burns or scrapes or cuts. My youngest daughter recently had a really bad finger injury and we were using it on her and it did not sting or burn her at all. So it was perfect. Today, as a listener of this podcast, you can get a special discount on your order of Active Skin Repair. Visit activeskinrepair.com to learn more, and to get 20% off your order, use code NOONETOLDUS. That's activeskinrepair.com, code NOONETOLDUS for 20% off your order.
Okay, so you mentioned that you had started on some medication, an antidepressant. I know that recently there has been a new medication that has come out. One of the first oral medications for postpartum depression was approved, I believe, over the summer. What can you tell us about that and who might be a good candidate for that? Or what are your general thoughts on medications versus, you know, more holistic approaches, therapy? How does somebody know like when a medication might be the right fit for them or not?
Yeah. And, you know, that's a really great question. I think also, like you mentioned, like some of my writing started speaking to people. And one of the first things that I think people really connected with was the fact that I talked about how it's really ironic that as a pharmacist, like I should understand, like, you know, this is what medications do. And yet I was so hesitant to take it. Like I did all the other things around it that I could until I fell back to it. And now having gone through it, I really understand that, like, first of all, it's not an easy choice because you don't know what it's going to do to you. And maybe medication is not for everybody, but there is a certain role it can play. And I think understanding that, like, after you take this pill, you're not going to feel magically better the next day. It's not going to make you happier. There are still circumstantial things that are contributing to your depression or your anxiety that you have to work on. And so you can't expect a medication to just fix you. It's really going to be a lot of like self-work. So it's medication in combination with like therapy and your own, the own steps that you take to work around the circumstances that you're dealing with. But what medication can offer, and I think for me at that point in time, because some of postpartum depression can be hormonal, can be neurochemical. And I think where it can help is that if you're so, if it's affecting you so much that your day-to-day functioning is just not there, I think what the medication really does for you is to help you stabilize and reset to the point that some of that fog kind of lifts. Because when you're so depressed and you don't have any energy to really do anything, even dragging yourself from like upstairs to downstairs, you can't really do anything. And so I think the medicine, what it does is it brings back that energy. It lifts up that fog so that you are not, so that you can actually see where you want to go, so that the therapy can actually help. You can actually let the therapy sink in. And so I think, that's kind of a way to think about how medications can help you, and maybe just sort of changing your expectation about like, hey, if I take this pill tomorrow, I'm going to be better. Or even like a month from now, I'm going to be better. But you're not going to be better if you don't put in the work too. So it's hard. Yeah. It is a lot of hard work. And so to your question about the new medication, typical antidepressants or a lot of traditional antidepressants work to keep serotonin, which is like a neurochemical that makes people's moods go up. They keep that around for a little bit longer, but in order to kind of alter and help keep that neurotransmitter around longer, they have to, it takes a while. It takes the body a little bit of time. So it takes 4 to 6 weeks for medications like that to work. And I think that's the hard part is like me, when I was really struggling, thinking, gosh, I needed to be better yesterday. Like I can't wait for this medication to work. And so this new medication that came out, it's not a typical medication like a serotonin reuptake inhibitor. Those are the main class. It's a new class on its own and works a little bit actually on GABA receptors and it's sort of a hormonal base sort of medicine almost. I think they call them neurosteroids and it works a lot faster actually, than a typical, at least what they have seen in trials. And so the course is actually only 2 weeks. You take it for two weeks and you're done. And as opposed to like the other antidepressants where you're on it for a while, it takes a while for it to work. It takes a while to titrate the dose to the right dose. Here you get a 2 week course. And then supposedly after that, people were starting to feel better. But the studies, I think there are limitations, I thought, on the studies. And I actually wrote a pretty thorough newsletter about it. I don't know if you want to link it in show notes later.
Yeah, it's still available. I definitely will.
Great. Yeah, and I kind of dug into the studies a little bit on like kind of the pros and cons and like where I would like to see a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But it seems promising. And the caveat is that the study participants they took were people who they classified as more severe postpartum depression.
Okay.
And the other thing is that people couldn't I think people were not breastfeeding while they were taking
this. I remember hearing that about it. So that was kind of a downside.
That is a downside. And and I want to say that like other antidepressants, a lot of them are studied to be pretty safe and effective and okay to use during breastfeeding. So for me, I think it would have worked because I had stopped breastfeeding, but I know that many people don't want to. And that's completely like, you know, you shouldn't have to. So I think more studies probably need to be done to see if this can be used with breastfeeding, but so far they have not said that that was okay.
Okay. Really good to know. And yeah, I'll definitely link that newsletter because I think a lot of people would probably be interested in taking a look because I think, like you said, a lot of people, you know, medication is just not the right fit for whatever reason, and that's totally fine. But I think there is such a stigma about accepting help, especially in the form of medication. And that's really a shame because it can really help a lot of people in a lot of situations. What are some other common like misconceptions or stereotypes about perinatal mental health or treatments that you have found in your own journey, just like particularly unhelpful or untrue or inaccurate or hurtful? What do you think are the biggest kind of myths out there about it?
Yeah. I mean, I even hear a lot of people say like, but breastfeeding is supposed to prevent postpartum depression. Like, why wouldn't you keep breastfeeding to make sure that you don't get it? And I think that's another chicken and egg kind of thing. Like, it could be causing it could be causing actually some of the depression or anxiety to come on. Yes, it could prevent it if you're having a good, like, feeding journey, you're having a good relationship with your child doing this and it's working for your family. Yes, I absolutely think it can be protective and breast milk is fantastic. But at the same time, like there's so much pressure now to do it all, to exclusive breastfeed, that like you probably realize it affects mom's sleep because they're just die hard trying so hard to make that work. Yeah. That they're losing sleep over it as well. So I think that's a really big one that can contribute to mood disorders. It's very like risk benefit kind of thing.
Right.
And so that played a role in my journey. And the other thing too that we just sort of touched on is the fact that like actually there was, and maybe we'll talk about this later, I have my own podcast and we interviewed a guest who said that his wife actually had to go on antidepressants and said, you know, I'm going to stop breastfeeding now because I have to take care of my mental health. And she was apologizing to her baby for not being able to breastfeed her baby because she had to go on medication. And I said, did anyone ever tell you that there are medications you can safely use while breastfeeding? Like that they didn't. No one told them that that was an option or, to discuss more if they wanted to continue breastfeeding. Like that just breaks my heart.
That's horrible.
So I think those are, that's a misconception that like, just because I want to take care of my mental health and try an antidepressant, then that means I have to stop breastfeeding. No. I think if you work with the right provider to give you the options, there definitely can be ways to make that work.
For sure. And I love that you just brought up your podcast because like you were mentioning earlier, another really big stigma for certain people is culturally, right? Like either, seeing a doctor in general or taking a certain medication or seeking therapy. Those things are just not done, not accepted. And so can you tell us a little bit about your podcast and what kind of like inspired you to start it? It's called Healing the Tigress.
Yeah, I'd love to share. Thank you for bringing that up. When I was in my healing journey, there was a website, I don't know if you remember, called Motherhood Understood.
Yes.
And yeah, she was a really big account and she was sharing a lot of stories of other moms that had gone through different perinatal mood disorders, whether it was anxiety, OCD, traumatic birth. I think hearing these real and raw stories from moms everywhere. Like it was incredible because you're like, wow, this is the stuff nobody hears about or talks about. Mm-hmm. And I loved reading those stories. But after a while, I think I was trying to seek out a story to connect more to myself and my own story. And I was looking, like as I was sifting through, I was looking for people who looked like me. I was looking for other Asian Americans who were talking about this happening because in my circle of friends, and I just thought, wow, I feel like none of my Asian American friends are struggling this hard. None of them talk about it. So like, is it just me? Like, am I the failing like Asian American over here? And so I was trying to pick out people's stories to read and there were so few. Wow. But I just thought that can't be it. There can't be just a handful of us struggling. And actually, as I opened up more and wrote more, some of the people who talked to me were other Asian Americans. And actually, there's a lot of people from Singapore that somehow follow me.
Oh, funny.
And a lot of them, I guess, also open up about the same struggles that they have. So I'm thinking, like, this is not just, this is an issue, you know, perinatal mood disorders don't discriminate.
No.
So I think knowing that I wanted to elevate more and share more like other Asian American stories. And so that's kind of the idea of like where this podcast, like why it started. My co-host is a therapist and she had followed my stories and we actually went to high school together. And so we've known each other for a while and she brought up to me, she's like, you know, I'd love to start a mental health podcast with you. Like, what do you think about that? And I said, I'd love that. And I'd love to focus on Asian Americans, like AAPI community. And she's also an Asian American. So that's kind of how Healing the Tigers was born, to sort of heal the tiger mom era, I guess, as we call it.
Yeah.
And just start to bring out more conversations for Asian Americans to know that like you're not alone and you're not the only one suffering this. You know, hearing other people that look like you talk about miscarriages, talk about, you know, being a single mom or talking about like postpartum depression, anxiety, OCD, psychosis, all these are topics we want to cover and have a few of them have covered. So it's very new. We just started like last September, but that's kind of what we've been working on.
I love that. And representation is so important. So I think that that is such a genius idea for a podcast. And the episodes that I've heard so far have been so great. So everybody go take a listen because, yeah, I love podcasts that, like you said, like make you feel less alone. Like I can't be the only one that's gone through this, right? I think that is so important, especially for new moms and first-time moms who really just had no idea what to expect. I think that that is so, so wonderful that you're doing that. We're going to be right back and we're going to talk when we get back about your decision to be one and done, because I think this is another huge topic that we hear about all the time on my Hey Sleepy Baby page. So I'm so interested to hear about your thought process behind that. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hi there, I'm Andrea Owen, self-help author with 19 translations of my books, global keynote speaker, and life coach. My podcast, Make Some Noise, has been serving up self-help in a simple-to-digest way for the last decade. The topics brought in each episode are practical and easy to implement around topics such as working through fears that keep you stuck, different modalities of therapy, managing your negative self-talk, and more. We bring you guest experts, solo episodes, and I even coach listeners on the air around relatable struggles. I also do my best to weave my sense of humor into some heavy topics because, let's face it, life can be pretty hard and it's so much better when we can have some fun while walking through our challenges. Whether you're seasoned in personal development or just starting out, Make Some Noise podcast will help you become the best version of yourself, the person you're proud of when you look in the mirror and show up in your life. Simply search Make Some Noise with Andrea Owen wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. And Jasmine, I would love to kind of just finish out our conversation talking a little bit about how your postpartum experience has kind of shaped what your family is going to look like. And this is something that I hear a lot on my page, Hey Sleepy Baby, because I do tend to have a lot of parents over there that struggle with sleep and, you know, that have had a hard journey in that way. But I also notice a trend in our generation, I guess I would say as a whole, that more people are deciding to be one and done. They're deciding to have one child and that's what their family is going to look like. And I would just love to hear from you about how you kind of came to that decision and what your thoughts are on being one and done with your daughter.
Yeah, sure. To be honest, I never imagined that was what my family was going to look like. I grew up with a sibling. And so I always imagined I'd have a family with at least two kids. Probably, actually, I'm not going to say at least. It would have been two kids only.
Two is a good number, and, too.
Yeah, two was it for me. Kind of like that's what I planned in my head.
Yeah.
And but this postpartum depression thing just really took me by surprise and caught me off guard. And there's, you know, something I like to say is that, you know, my mom always said like, oh, like, you know, having a sibling is such a gift. Like, you know, I gave you a sibling and it was such a gift, like, you know, that you could have this companion, like a built-in companion for the rest of your life. Not to say that I don't, I love my sister. But I'm saying, you know, some siblings don't necessarily have a guaranteed great relationship, and maybe it becomes a burden instead of a blessing. And so, you know, going into this, I always thought I have to give my child a sibling because that's all I've ever heard from my mom, all I've ever known. And to be a good mom, that's what I have to do. But after this whole experience, I realized the best gift to give your child is not necessarily a sibling. The best gift to give your child is a healthy mom, a mom that's there, who's present, who's well, who can give you all of herself in a way that, you know, she's not martyring herself.
Yeah.
So it took a lot for me to kind of get to that point, I think. I struggled a lot during the time she was about three because I always liked the age gap of about 4 years, 4.5 years or so. That's that's me and my sister. And so I liked that age gap. I personally, that was what I was shooting for. So by the time she was three, I was starting to get anxious thinking, do I need to start thinking about trying again? There was also a little bit of anxiety about, well, what if our infertility issues come back? Like, how long is that going to take? Is this going to cause unnecessary anxiety again in trying to conceive? And then I would be taking away some of my energy for my child, my current child, just trying to even make another child. So at that point, I actually sought out a therapist that had a PMHC, a perinatal mental health certification, because, you know, I wanted to make sure if I did get pregnant, I had somebody on board who knew my whole history, who knew like what I was going through and could support me all the way. And some of it we talked about, like, would I breastfeed this time? Would I go straight to formula? What would sleep rotations and support look like? How would I get the sleep that I need this second time around? And I guess after just talking through everything, I'm not even sure we really even came to a conclusion. We came up with great plans, like what could we do for support? And my parents and my husband's parents would not probably be able to give as much support. So a lot of it's just us. Yeah. So I think like the decision at the end of the day, like for anybody, it really depends on like, what support do you have? And going forward, like what can you do to be the best for your family? And I think part of it too was I had to learn to grieve that vision I had.
Yeah.
I had to give myself permission to grieve over it and also to let it go and realize that it's okay to paint new dreams, because maybe I just always thought I had to have a family of four because that's what society tells you you need. That's what my mom told me I needed. But what did I really need? Did I really think about like what I really wanted? Or I was just thinking about what other people wanted for me. And at this point in time, like, I value my mental health and it's at a great place. It's really hard for me to rock the boat and think about going back there. Trying to figure out the whole sleep again. And that insomnia piece that just really shook me to my core. So things are really great right now that I feel like I don't need to mess this up. I don't need to change it up. And
yeah,
I feel like my podcast is my second baby at this point.
There you go. How do you kind of navigate, like, how does your family feel about it? What do you ever get comments from other people about, you know, oh, when are you going to have another? How do you kind of deal with that? Because I know that can be really annoying.
Yeah. And my husband has been so supportive. Like, he was like, I am okay, whatever you decide. If you wanted a second kid, like, we would make it work. If you don't want a second kid, this is great. I love our family. You know, oh, he said, and the most important thing he says that you're well and you're here. You're here with us. Yeah. You're taking care of us. And, you know, you're physically and mentally here. And that's so huge. So I think having his support on this has been great and like a huge part of it. Other people, I think like, I know for a while my mom was kind of hinting like, oh, do you think you might want, you know, to think about it? Because it's kind of like that right timing.
Yeah.
But I think that they're hesitant to say that I should or should not because they realize what I went through was pretty severe. Mm-hmm. And so my dad actually told me after this whole, like pretty early on, like actually after I was recovering and stuff, he told me, like, I don't think you should have another kid. And my dad was like, I'd rather you just be happy and here. So I really appreciate that. Like, I actually think because I'm so vocal about it, I don't get a lot of comments saying, like, you should. Occasionally, you'll get the random, like, internet person who's like, oh, but siblings are such a blessing. Like, oh, you'd be doing your kid a disservice. But, you know, everyone's story is different. You have to respect that.
It's so true. Well, I really appreciate you opening up about that and being honest about it. I know so many people struggle with it. And I think it's also okay to just not know for a while, right? Like you said, you kept the door open till your daughter was three. And so I think, you know, a lot of times people are in the thick of it. Like when they're talking to me about it, they're still in the thick of the sleepless nights and their baby is still really young. And they're like, how could I ever do this again? And it's kind of like, well, maybe you'll want to, and then also maybe you won't, and either one are okay.
Exactly. And yeah, I feel like maybe even when she was like four, I was still kind of like, the door is not completely closed. Hmm. Like, and the other thing was like, I think with my therapist at some point, she was like, are you still thinking about it? Because our discussions during therapy would shift to other topics and it stopped being about the one and done. It wasn't consuming me so much. I think I just really learned to like enjoy what I had, the relationship that I had with my daughter, and just actually finding more of myself during that time period. You know, I love the relationship I have with her. It's so great. And, you know, I'm just like, I would hate to like have to disrupt it to try something else. Yeah. And I know that moms with multiples, you make it work. Moms with one, moms with multiples, women who don't want kids, you make it work. You know, you do what's good for you. So I feel like I haven't like fully said anywhere that like I'm officially like one and done. I didn't feel like I needed to announce that, but like it's kind of where it's landed, I think.
Okay, I love that. And like you said, you don't need to make this like grand announcement. You don't have to wear a sign on your forehead that says I'm dead. Like it's nobody's business, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So Jasmine, before I let you go, what is one thing no one told you before becoming a parent that you wish you knew? And it could be, you know, related to this mental health journey or something completely different. But what do you feel like you just wish someone had pulled you aside and warned you about?
I think this is something that actually came up on our podcast because my co-host went through this and she said this, and I thought it really sat with me as well, or really like resonated. I think we go into this thinking I have to be everything. I have to be the best. I have to be the most perfect mom. And if I'm not, you know, keeping up with everything, then I'm a bad mom and I'm failing. And there's this idea though of the good enough mother.
Yeah.
And that's all you need to be. You're not going to be a perfect mother. And I love that message she had. And I think that that is one thing I wished people had told me, because I think a lot of us type A perfectionist people go into it, you know, we're so used to the control we have over our lives and being able to control things and organize and, you know, make things happen for us. But you can't hold on to that control when you have a baby. Like,
you can drive yourself crazy trying.
Exactly. They're their own person. They're their own being. And you have to respect that too. And so I think it's a very humbling journey to be a parent. And so I think if moms just went into it giving themselves a little more grace. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to be good enough.
I love that. It's so true. Jasmine, where can listeners connect with you, find your resources and your podcast?
Yeah. So you can find me over on Instagram at Pearls of Jasmine. I have a blog, which is also pearlsofjasmine.com. I don't blog very much anymore, but my whole like postpartum depression story, I kind of go into details about the antidepressants, starting it, even weaning off of them and that experience. So that's all very in detail on my blog if people want to read more. I also have a newsletter I recently started last summer that is more up to date. I'll send out topics and stuff, just like the one about the zuranolone, the new medication. Mm-hmm. And the podcast is over on at Healing the Tigress. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, I think pretty much anywhere that pools podcasts. So those Perfect. Are the big places. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today and again for being so open and vulnerable. We really appreciate it. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You as well.
Hey, are you a parent of a teenager? Are you feeling overwhelmed about how to be what they need while also holding limits and boundaries that keep them safe? Are you tired of conversations that negate how messy this season of parenting is? Well, I've got you. My name is Casey O'Rourke. I am a positive discipline trainer, parent coach, and the host of the Joyful Courage podcast. Every week, I come to you with an interview, digging into tough topics with experts I trust and solo shows that go deep into the personal growth and mindset needed to raise teens in a way that grows them into confident, capable young people. I am not afraid of getting real about the intersection of conscious parenting and the teen years, while also bringing in vulnerability, humor, and lightness. I'm walking the path with you and honored to serve. Listen to Joyful Courage on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you consume podcasts.